sitting behind Clara and applauding her earlier on, is the happiest man in the world, in fact, he tells me. Why is he the happiest man in the world? This song will tell all. The happiest man in the world from...
Hard to believe, isn't it?
Well, particularly hard to believe since Clara was quite understandably very happy about her winning a bursary.
Euphoric. I felt she was euphoric.
She certainly was. You're quite happy, according to that song, for having nothing. I guess it's not actually about having nothing, Ed. It's about maybe turning your mind towards other riches. Is that what the idea behind the song is?
That's exactly what the idea is, yes.
So... when you start to write a song like that, where does it come from? Does it come from a place of anger or a place of contentment?
It comes from a 22-year marriage dissolving and a global economy going bankrupt and finding yourself with alone and absolutely nothing. And some might say that it's rationalizing, but others might say it's reprioritizing. And finding the spiritual side of what could be a very dark place.
And the emotions around that, I'll come back to those two words, anger, contentment, were either or both involved? You know, to actually turn the feelings into a song like that, which clearly has a satirical quality to it, and a certain euphoric quality, to use your word.
You know, it's funny because I've been around for a while and I'm known for my... maybe satire or irony, but oddly enough, there's not that. We've edited that tune a little bit. On the record, you're introduced to some real friends of mine that I put in there. I've changed their names, but there is no irony in that. I when the marriage went down and I was in a very dark place, almost suicidal, but I had an 8-year-old boy that I was taking care of, so... suicide wasn't an option, but I wrote a song to, and I was also, interestingly enough, 22 years sober. You may see some correlating numbers there. So Idle Hands Me in the Devil's Playground, I wrote a song every day and posted it to YouTube for a year, 365 songs. And when the song started to turn the corner and become sort of hopeful or there was redemption and salvation in those songs. Those were the songs that I chose to rework.
Attack dog protest folk.
Yeah.
What is that? Because that's how you're described.
I'm not a singer. I mean, it's funny. I came from a sort of a punk rock background. I definitely came from the things that I interpret as rock and roll could be a David Lynch film or a Charles Bukowski book or a... you know, by definition, those are rock and roll to me. So I came from that background, and I found it increasingly difficult at the age of 30 to find guys to play in a band with. And so I went solo, but I sort of kept that sensibility. I had never really listened to solo singer-songwriters. The folk music that I listened to was like a Lead Belly or a Dylan or a Neil Young. Those were rock and roll guys to me. So I sort of kept that Clash, Sex Pistols sensibility in my... show. So it gets described as a lot of different things. It's hard to pinpoint.
But when you were writing those songs, the one song every day for a year, was it important to you to actually have some form of message? Is not, it's a clumsy word, but was it important to you what you were saying? How important was that aspect of the songwriting?
Depend on the day, you know? I mean, some days I had made it a personal goal. Some days it was very liberating because I had already written a ballad. I had written a spoken word piece. No one, you know, I think the most hits that any of those got was maybe 1,000 hits. Some of those as little as 3 or 4 hits. No one was looking over your shoulder. You weren't planning to ever commit it to CD or vinyl or get it out there. You could write anything. So I could have wrote a waltz. I did write waltzes. I wrote little playlets. It was very liberating. You know, I think your songwriting muscles are not unlike any other muscles in your body, and you keep working them, and they get better. So there are oft times I would sit down and go, well, I don't have anything. And within minutes, something would, in fact, come up, you know.
And in terms of these songs themselves, the political and the economic situation,
yeah.
When you were writing about some of the characters in your songs,
yeah.
Are these, you say they're friends of yours,
yeah.
Are they inspired by real people?
Yes.
People that you know.
Absolutely.
Tell me about Bobby, the Russian guy.
Well, he's two people. And interestingly enough, he's two friends of mine, one of who's become sober. I mean, one of them was a friend of mine whose mother had left his father and five kids and moved away with somebody. So the kids, the poor father, he worked, and the kids were, so he got addicted to heroin when he was 13 years old. And he's hysterically funny. I mean, this way, but he got sober when he was, and he really turned to a life of crime for the next 10, 15 years.
Which is what the story of the song tells, I guess, isn't it?
Yeah, he got sober, and he's a guidance counselor, or he's a drug therapist for treatment for kids in the program. It's miraculous, really, the story, you know. But he's still hysterically funny. It's hard. It's really, he was always hysterical. He would tell us things that happened, and you couldn't help but laugh. And everybody kind of knows somebody like that. They got an uncle. When I first started writing, I was resistant to writing about him. But you found, particularly in Ireland, no, it was a joke. But you found that everybody had somebody like that in their family that were doing criminal things, but it was really, really funny. Now the good news, as I say, is he's turned his life around. He helps people. Young kids, really, in rehab, and it's a cool thing. So he's one, and then the other one died. But
you were going to sing a second song for us. This, you told me before we came to air, is probably the most Christian song on the album.
Yes.
What do you mean by that, and how serious are you when you say that?
I'm dead serious. You know, if I say too much about it, I'll kind of blow the punchline. Can we talk about it after or no?
No, well, let's set it up and let them make their own minds up.
I mean, there's less of it in, and I'm not blowing sunshine up your butt when I say this. Ireland is my favorite country to play, and Ireland. And somebody asked me earlier today, because what are the difference between an American audience, for instance, or an Irish audience? Now, not much, because the American audiences are. They know what they're going to walk into when they see a Hamelin trial show. But initially, very different. Ireland immediately got me. I always drew really nice crowds here in Ireland. Took a long time for that to happen in America. And I think because of the fact that America was settled by Puritans, and yet, you know, the country was built on genocide and slavery, there's a lot of contradiction there. So my satire and humor was not always appreciated. So I do believe this is a Christian song, but, you know, you have
gotta
to wait.
Carefully.
Yeah.
You got to listen. Whores is the name of the song. The Happiest Man in the World is the name of the album. Hamel on Trial, or Ed Hamel, as we've been calling him. His first gig is at Cobblestone Joe's in Limerick tomorrow evening. He's at the Cathedral Quarter Arts Festival in Belfast on Thursday. And you can find out details of all the other gigs at hamiltonontrial.com. One M, two L's. And that's M-E-L-L for Hamel, hamiltonontrial.com.